Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download of your choice and get a free month subscription to Audible by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 titles, including Chris Jericho's latest book, The Best in the World, At What? I Have No Idea, and Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream. Hey, maybe you want something else. I got one of Nick Offerman's audiobooks, and he narrates it himself. It's hilarious. It's great. It's entertaining. Get any audiobook available that you'd like for absolutely no cost. It's free. Go claim your audiobook for free today at audibletrial.com/missspots. Now, enjoy the show.
Time to play the game!
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast, the pro wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling already going on in their lives, so we decide to talk about it on the internet through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music, also Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Chris Jericho to my Kevin Owens. Here is Kevin.
Drink it in, man. And you know what this podcast has? It has
it. And we're going to talk about it.
Who would have thought that the word it would be a promo material gold?
It's over. We are going to talk about some Clash of Champions tonight. Also Raw and SmackDown following up this pay-per-view event. So Clash of Champions, a throwback name to the WCW bygone era.
Much better than Night of Champions. Clash of Champions is wonderful.
This is the first Raw-specific pay-per-view of the recent brand split, brand extension, brand whatever.
Brand.
And they had many more matches announced ahead of time before Backlash did for the pay-per-view for SmackDown. Would it end up working in their favor? We shall see. Spoiler alert. No, it didn't. So, pre-show match. We had Nia Jax taking on Alicia Fox. Nia Jax beats Alicia Fox, but I think way too long of a match. Little under 5 minutes. This should have been a 2-minute extended squash, in my opinion.
I kind of agree with you there. It wasn't bad to see Alicia get a little bit of offense in, but it should have been a little bit shorter. In my opinion, I mean, listen, Alicia Fox looked game, which was good. She looked like she had a little bit of fire to her, but Nia should have squashed her a little bit more quickly. It was a fine match, though. It wasn't bad. It continued to build, Nia Jax as a monster, finally fighting someone that's actually on the main roster.
See, I'll disagree with that slightly, because while it does, I think, build Nia, I don't think it does as good of a job as if she would have beat her more soundly.
She should have beat her more soundly and faster, because Alicia Fox has never been, at least in my recollection, any kind of threat in the Divas.
She's held the Divas Championship before, but not for an extended period.
So, yes, should it have been a little bit faster, but it's kind of splitting hairs. It was fine for what it was.
It was a nice, somewhat competitive match. If this were maybe Nia's second or third feud, I would have been more accepting of this. But since it's her first major feud on the main roster, I would have liked to see her beat her quicker.
I agree.
Whatever. It is what it is. Nia goes over. That's what it was intended to do. The main show starts off things with the Raw Tag Team Championship match. New Day defending against Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. Very surprising finish to this. I think that almost everyone expected Anderson and Gallows to go over here, but we had the New Day win and continue their title reign in a not that long match. It was, from what I'm seeing here, the official time was 6:45.
It wasn't just that. It was also the finish itself with Xavier hitting, one of the members of Anderson and Gallows. I can't remember which one.
He hit, Anderson with the, with trombone, Francesca.
Listen, Anderson and Gallows started this match off dominant and kind of throwing them around the ring and being badasses, which we hoped to see. And it kind of led to what we thought was going to happen, which was Anderson and Gallows going over, dethroning New Day and becoming a serious threat and a serious participant in the tag team division, which really, really needs some serious threats in the Raw tag team division. We just don't have anybody. Mm-hmm. So we were both picking them. When we saw them lose, that's one thing. But to have the babyfaces cheat, I just don't get it. All I could say was, what? I know this is the new era. I know that we're in the era of the anti-hero. I know that I understand that the babyfaces don't always have to be clean cut and maybe they can cheat every now and then. But I just, viscerally, I don't understand it. The New Day should not have cheated to win. They should have either won clean or Anderson and Gallows should have gone over.
I think this was the overall theme of the night, was weird finishes that just didn't make sense to the whole story.
Most of what happened in ring, I thought was pretty good. The finishes across the board just seemed wrong. And we'll get into more of them.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a shame. I thought this was a good opportunity to put Anderson and Gallows over and make them a serious threat. And we'll see the next night on Raw, they're just treading water.
Yeah.
They're just another also ran in the tag team division. The New Day, the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. After this, we had the WWE Cruiserweight Championship match with the debuting on the main roster, TJ Perkins, champion, defending against Brian Kendrick. I like that they changed the ring ropes up. They put purple ring ropes up. They have purple turnbuckle pads. TJ's entrance, I really enjoyed with the Mega Man,
the
like
8-bit entrance.
I really enjoyed it.
I like the music. I think some people probably will rebel against it a little bit, but I enjoyed it.
The issue, of course, that I had with this was that TJ wasn't, premiered on the Raw leading up to this when he was the champion. And a lot of people don't really know who he is. Kendrick is a little bit more recognizable to some because he has spent time in the WWE in his career. This was an okay match. I feel like TJ flubbed some of his signature moves, probably a little bit of butterflies in there. He had the double chicken wing that typically turns into a gut buster with the double knees that he pretty much made Brian Kendrick sterile from. He has the almost go to sleep like move, but it's a kick to the face instead of a knee that didn't look super smooth. It was a fine match, but not the best that could have been put on. And I think that some of that was on TJ just having some nerves there.
Quite possibly, and I have not seen, I did not watch the Cruiserweight Classic. I don't have the indie experience watching indie wrestling as you do. I thought this was pretty good. I thought that the action was good. I thought that Perkins had some really interesting offense that I hadn't seen before, which I enjoyed. They're doing the Cruiserweight division in a different way. You even see them checking the boots and the tights.
Oh yeah.
Before
they try to get them to shake hands before the match.
Yeah, and then at the end of the match, we have them raising the hands, you know, holding the two hands and raising the hand of the other. So they're booking this division in a very different way.
Sport-like thing.
Which I like the presentation. I just, I think that they should talk more about it. I think they should make it more apparent, through commentary. I thought this was a fine match. I did like I said, I like the entrance. Perkins won with the knee bar, I believe. And we had, at the end of the match, we had Brian Kendrick headbutt Perkins.
Yeah, he shook his hand, hugged him, and then a full-on heel
move.
So
now we have a heel in the Cruiserweight division that's coming after Perkins. Mm. So we're now starting a storyline, which is very important. The crowd was okay. They enjoyed this, but we're not going to really get into these into these characters until we know who they are. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of this because Kendrick, I think, is a highly underrated talent as far as heels go. I thought that his heel persona as the Brian Kendrick and his last run with WWE was very good, and he's continuing a little bit of that here. So it'll be good to see this ultra babyface TJ Perkins take on Brian Kendrick through the next at least month or so. Then we have the seventh match in the best of seven series between Cesaro and Sheamus, a very well put together feud, wonderful story that's been built up so far. We got to see that Sheamus and Cesaro are very, very good in the ring together. They, even outside of the ring, I even thought that their promos have been short and sweet and to the point, getting both of them across for what they are. Cesaro was the ultra face. Sheamus was the ultra heel.
It's a little old school. I feel like it's 1996 again watching these guys go at it, and that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. And we got a really good match. Some cringing moments, of course, like Sheamus's, like that Celtic cross into the backbreaker.
I was thinking the razor's edge. I'm sorry, it's Celtic cross, but yeah, that's a brutal looking move.
Yeah.
And he's performed it several times now, and every time it looks like he's going to kill him.
And
Cesaro.
We saw Cesaro go for a tope through the ropes and plant his head on the concrete.
I called that a really stupid dive through the ropes. Please never do that again.
Apparently, he has said that he is not doing topes anymore.
Thank God. Because that was the fact that he had not killed himself and he could continue wrestling through that match was really thankful. We're thankful for that because we want to see him on the program. It wasn't necessary. That dive was not necessary for the match. But we did end up having a match that was called. Because neither guy could continue to compete. I mean, how did you feel about that?
To a certain extent, it kind of made sense because of how much these two beat each other up over the course of this entire feud. But it was also, I think, a bait and switch, a cheap move because of how much these guys really did put into it that you couldn't make one of them the winner. We had them get into the audience, beat each other down, and neither could continue as far as the ref and the ringside doctors, Orlando Jordan included. it felt cheap to me. Overall, it really did feel
cheap.
My
problem with this is the pure psychology of everything. And we didn't, you know, we're not talking about Clash of Champions, not Raw, which we saw a continuation of this, which I thought was interesting. We'll talk about in a bit. But the story was Cesaro overcoming 3-0, which is not normal in a best of seven. We see a lot of back and forth in most
even in
seven.
Real sports.
No. So the story was Cesaro overcoming the odds to win. And by the end of this match, a dead crowd, and the crowd was not great that night, a dead crowd actually got back into it and was excited to see Cesaro pull out the victory. The story that they were telling the whole time was Cesaro overcoming to win. And then they didn't give us that, and they ended up giving us something else. Now, something else might be good. I am actually cautiously optimistic about something else. But
that's good for you.
Yeah, but they changed storylines, in my opinion, midstream for whatever reason. It seems to me like hotshot booking. I feel like they had a plan and they changed the plan. And I just thought they started one story and they didn't finish it. And that's what bothered me.
Even if it looked blatantly obvious, like especially when Sheamus went up 3-0 and you're like, okay, we know that Cesaro's going to win the next
storm
three.
Back and
no doubt. Even if it was blatantly obvious that we all thought that Cesaro was going to win the whole thing, that doesn't take away from the pure joy that someone would feel. I think that Rhino and Slater are a perfect example of this because we kind of all felt like Slater and Rhino are going to win this tournament because it makes the story complete. It still made it incredible to see that actually happen.
The crowd was finally behind it and it was the time to pull the trigger on Cesaro and give him this big win to help him catapult him up the card. It would not have hurt Sheamus at all. They went in a different direction. I'm not a fan of the way of that kind of booking, because the story wrote itself and it was there. At the end of the match, you got Cesaro gets back in the ring and starts calling Sheamus back in, and Sheamus is being escorted out. It shows that Cesaro's a tough guy, and they continue that later on. Just, in my opinion, not great booking for that match.
Yeah, I
was ready for the feel-good moment, and I would have been happy mm-hmm. for it. Guys that got drawn into the storyline, you and I, yeah. We were ready for it.
It's like WWE thinks that feel-good moments have to be a surprise. They don't have to be. A feel good
telegraph from a mile.
Because you can have a moment like that in real sports. Like when, I can't remember, was it 2001 or so? When the Red Sox had they were down 3-0 to mm-hmm. the Yankees. They came back and they won that series to go to the World Series. Try to tell me for one moment that no Boston fan didn't think that was possible and weren't still insanely happy at seeing that happen.
Well, of course, we understand this is predetermined. We understand that this is a storyline being told to us. It's a little more like Breaking Bad. It's a little more like knowing that Walt's going to get out of his situation, mm-hmm. but we still root for him and we still are happy when he does it.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
I think it would have been a good story. Once again, they went a different direction. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I think you and I might have a little different ideas about that. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was a missed opportunity. That's what it was.
I agree. Then we got Chris Jericho taking on Sami Zayn in one-on-one competition. A very good match between these two. Jericho is still on the top of his game, as we have been claiming recently, even though for the longest time we were saying he's probably not.
But you and I will be turned around by good work.
Yes, absolutely.
And good mic work and good character building.
The result of this match was what we expected by the result. How it went about was a little differently.
A little surprising, yeah.
We thought Jericho was going to cheat to win. He won clean.
Clean.
Over Sammy. And that was the surprising bit. He got the code breaker in there after a competitive match. It was kind of a desperation. It looked like a desperation move, and he gets the 1-2-3. And we'll see where it goes thereafter. But
this to me, this match in general shows that Sammy has not been booked very well or pushed very well on the main roster.
You know,
he has, even during the KO feud, he's never been given the kind of vignette, the kind of storytelling, the kind of angle to really get him over like he did in NXT, like they did with Bayley in NXT, which we saw the night after, Clash of Champions, which they finally, I think, started doing the right thing for her. They're not people that are hardcore fans are invested in Sami Zayn, but the casual fan is not. And that's not Sami Zayn's fault. It's a WWE's fault. They haven't really told the story of Sami Zayn yet, and they haven't done a good job of it. And I think we saw that. We saw Y2J chants throughout this match.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Chris Jericho is the heel here, the obvious heel. But they're cheering for him because he is the established star, because they don't know Sami Zayn enough to cheer for him. They need to reinvest in bringing these guys up properly, which they have not done. They thought that the Kevin Owens feud was just going to get him over. Well, maybe it would have if you would have used that momentum to do anything with him, but they didn't. And also, I do have to mention, it's down in my notes, Sammy needs to stop doing that jump, the moonsault off the barricade.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't hit it clean yet. He barely grazed Chris Jericho's knee on this one on Clash of Champions.
Give it to Jericho. He sold the knee.
He sold it like a champ. But he hasn't hit that well yet. So
playing devil's advocate here a little bit, because this just came to me. What if the WWE is purposefully trying to build Sammy as their next Daniel Bryan? Like that because they absolutely misjudged Bryan, and they saw what became, what if they are trying to do that on purpose, like try to misbook him, get the fan support around him, and because of that, and then build him up off of that?
Obviously, it's possible, but I just don't think they've introduced him well. I don't think, I don't think they've handled his character
well. They're
just
not smart enough to do that.
I just don't think they've handled him well. Mm-hmm. I think there's been good parts of Sami Zayn's character. I think that the fighting John Cena for the US Open Challenge was amazing. I think the KO, program was very good. I just don't think they know what to do with him, and I don't think they know how to book him. Mm-hmm. And I was all for, Chris Jericho going over by cheating. I was not all for him going over clean.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good, I don't think it's a good thing for Sami Zayn. And I don't think it's a great thing for Jericho. Jericho easily cheats there and gets more heat. I love it. Anyway.
Moving on to the Raw Women's Championship match, triple threat match, with Charlotte defending against Bayley and Sasha Banks. Because it is triple threat rules, there is no disqualifications and no countouts. Why isn't Dana Brooke just beating the shit out of people? That's why there shouldn't be managers down at the rings.
It's also the question for every triple threat that's ever been booked ever.
Yeah. We, in a surprising finish to, I think, us, definitely, Charlotte goes over, pinning Bayley after a big boot, which she used the Raw before to win their tag team match.
Yeah.
So maybe this is another new finisher to add to her repertoire.
I mean,
it seems like three finishers seems to be the thing over two now.
Well,
AJ has three.
I mean, I definitely don't mind that. I like seeing people win in different ways. I just want to point out that Charlotte looks amazing. She was a star. She was a star. She walked to the ring. She owned the ring. Her early offense was brutal and aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Just continues to impress every time out. You and I think both picked Sasha to go over here.
Yeah.
Because we thought it was time for the feel good moment. I'm starting to lose a little steam on Sasha. I think her babyface character is not nearly as good as her heel character. And
that's for sure.
And Charlotte holding that title makes it special. And she has never lost on a pay-per-view.
Yep.
That's a thing. And I like the fact that they're continuing this. At this point, I really want her to hold that title for a while longer. She goes over Bayley with a big boot. And we were a little surprised, but quite honestly, I think it's the best. It was the best outcome. I don't necessarily agree with the exact booking of the finish. I would have liked to see natural selection or something else, but I thought it was good.
Sasha is interesting in this case because Sasha got over with the crowd by being a heel. Like in NXT,
yep.
She was a heel and people loved the shit out of her. And then she had the feud with Bayley. She got even more respect from people, still playing a very over the top heel.
Right.
Vicious heel. Yeah. And then she came to WWE, like to the main roster, and she was made quasi heel by being with Naomi.
Yeah.
And Tamina. Is she even around? Like, is she even employed anymore?
Tamina? Oh, she's coming back soon.
Okay.
I've heard. Well, one of the things I just want to mention about the match. The triple threat was very well done. Very well booked. It was believably booked. I thought everything was smooth. It was well done. The finish came out of nowhere and I wasn't a huge fan of it, but if you go down this card, this was as good as any match on that card.
Yes.
I was
absolutely
really happy with that match. And it just shows that these guys work really, really well together.
Gals.
Guys, gals, whatever.
Charlotte is owning the role that she's in right now.
I'm so impressed by her.
Yes. We were definitely hard on her when she was a babyface, and even at the beginning of her heel run, we were. But it's so great to see that since she ditched her dad, who you would think would be able to help her get over, she's been doing a wonderful job holding her own.
If you are not enjoying Charlotte's work, you're not watching. You're not watching it correctly.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. You really don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So Charlotte retains there. U.S. title match. Rusev defending against Roman Reigns. And we get what we really didn't want to see. We really hoped wouldn't happen. Roman Reigns beating Rusev after a few Superman punches and spear combinations. I mean, they looked great. It was a great match. And Roman is John Cena 2.0 because maybe, Roman maybe. Can put on a fantastic match, but he is just, his character is not appreciated by the crowd. His character is not where it should be.
He's got the look. He's got the ability, but listen, when big boos for Roman when he came out, we had Let's Go Roman. Let's go Roman. Let's go Rusev. Let's go Roman. Roman sucks. Mm-hmm. We got Rusev chance there. This was a very divided crowd. And my first question or my first thought is, WWE Universe, when will you understand that WWE doesn't care what you think? That was my first thought. When Lana interfered, she was the biggest babyface in the company.
Yeah.
Because the crowd went nuts when she interfered in the match and stopped Roman from winning with distraction. And we end up with, as you said, with Roman going over. And, man, I feel bad for Rusev.
Yes.
Because Rusev got himself, and I believe this, I mean, with his own work and obviously good writing, got himself over to a degree to go out against John Cena at a WrestleMania. And after that, while losing many matches, lost all momentum, was an embarrassment with the stuff they gave him with Summer Rae and Dolph.
And he came back from it.
Came back and was more dedicated, did his job even better, showed some flashes of comedy and fun, became the Bulgarian brute again, and then we see him toppled by Roman Reigns. I just feel there's more for Rusev to do than be fodder for the mainstream guys on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame because he could really be something. And I honestly say this. He's not, depending on how they book him straight from this point forward, the whole idea of him being buried by Cena, he kind of was because the way they booked that feud.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily true just to lose to Roman Reigns, but it's tough. Rusev loses a lot of momentum here.
And we've talked about this ad nauseum about how weird the whole story is, because we've had a heel champion defending the honor of his wife against a babyface who is acting like a bully, a bro, like a frat boy.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't seem to work out. And like Rusev has built up a very nice following from people. Like they could probably turn him face if they wanted to.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
They could play an American Dream type story to him, that he's like, he came to America to realize his dream of being a professional wrestler.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And he would be insanely over. But I feel like they need to allow him to get over as a heel in order to make that work a little more.
The fact is, he's done some good work, and if his job was to put Roman Reigns over and make him a bigger star, then he did it. I just think there's more for Rusev.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he'll go after the Universal Championship here in the near future, depending on what ends up happening down the road with who ends up. I mean, if Seth Rollins ends up down the road with that title, or Finn Balor comes back and has that title. I'm talking about months down
the
road.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Rusev steps up and this is a stepping stone for him. Who knows? But for now, it does feel like a waste. It feels like they wasted his promise and ability to put over a guy who the crowd will never really get behind.
Absolutely.
And I don't think they ever really will.
I am with you.
In this incarnation.
The main event time. Universal Championship match with Kevin Owens defending against Seth Rollins. A finish that we predicted, again, not exactly in the way that we thought. I expected shenanigans here. We didn't really get that. I thought Triple H is getting involved in this, no doubt. to break Seth off from the title picture to give him his feud with Triple H. We saw no Triple H whatsoever. We got a very nice match between two amazing competitors.
But this is my question to you, and this is the way I felt, so I'm gonna pitch this to you.
Okay.
Was this up to your expectations? Did this, when you thought of Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins in the ring together, did you enjoy it as much as you thought you were going to?
I can look at that in a couple different fashions, because from the standpoint of those two talents, I would say that this was a good match that I did expect out of them. I do think that they could have done better, but then I'm also going and looking at how I expected the match to play out. And because I expected interference and whatnot, I actually think that they overshot that expectation by not having that go down. So maybe I thought that the match was a little better than what I was hoping for, because I expected shenanigans in the finish.
See, I'm in a different camp here. I think this match is really hurt by Seth, his status in the WWE. I feel like him as a tweener, because he hasn't really officially been a face yet, mm-hmm. the fact that he was booked as a tweener.
He played to the crowd so much.
He did, but we still don't know who Seth Rollins is.
There hasn't been that exact moment that it was...
It's time to,
like,
do it.
And he did, here he is, and doing he did, a baby face
thing. And he didn't officially turn during the match either. And I think it was hurt, because it was just another 50-50 crowd reaction. People love Kevin Owens, people love Seth Rollins. And in this match, we really needed to see Seth as the hero and Kevin Owens as the heel. We really needed to see that. And because of that, I think the match was hurt. I think the momentum of the match was hurt. I think Seth's comeback was hurt, because people really wanted to see Kevin Owens win. And if Seth would have really been the conquering babyface, really been booked as a conquering babyface, I don't think it would have happened, because Kevin Owens will get over and will get himself over as a heel. He knows how to do it. But he needs a babyface to do it. He needs a strong babyface. And right now we've got a tweener Seth Rollins. I think the match is hurt by that.
Let me throw a scenario out at you here. So let's say we got Seth playing nearly babyface. He's still sort of tweener, but leaning more towards the babyface, which he has been doing.
Agreed.
And we put a tag team match on Raw. Seth and Roman against Kevin and Rusev, who are definitive heels. Roman being the face that the company wants. And during the course of this match, you have, this is a double turn scenario. Roman attacks Seth. They are in theory both baby faces in this match, by the way the WWE is booking them, but you solidify then with the hardcore fans, Roman is now a heel. You also cement with the casuals, because who they thought that Roman was a face up to this point, Seth is now the face. Now, Seth is very over as a face with both the hardcores and the casuals. Roman is now over as a heel with both the hardcores and the casuals. And you got them both each way.
Dude, we've been talking. We've pitched a lot of these ideas.
We have.
All the time. And I think that's a great idea. That's a great way to run with it. I do think that a double turn or any kind of Roman Reigns heel turn would be best for business. But, you know, we're not going to get it.
Like,
and the fact is that if Seth is going to be a babyface, he needs to be a babyface. We were in this situation a little bit with Dolph and Dean recently.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a babyface versus a heel. Let's not do this tweener stuff.
I'm going to talk about
because it gets hurt.
Dolph some more in
a little
while.
It gets hurt down the road. This we did not talk about the fact that this was an overbooked finish. This was a ref bump, a really bad ref bump.
Yes.
There was Stephanie McMahon coming down. There was Chris Jericho coming down, getting involved. There was Stephanie McMahon coming down with a referee way too late. This was a overbooked finish, just like a lot of the matches earlier on that had kind of wild, stupid, weird finishes that didn't really fit the storyline. Overall, I don't think it was a great pay-per-view. I don't think it was a great special event. And I think it was hurt by bad booking with the main event. And I think overall with who Seth's character was and how the finish happened. So what was your grade for the pay-per-view?
I would say a C to C plus.
Yeah, I'm C minus. I thought that the finishes hurt this pay-per-view almost across the board.
I'm with you.
Almost across the board, there wasn't a really good finish to this pay-per-view. The Cruiserweight championship match, okay, that was fine. But I just didn't think that there was a lot of good finishes here.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. TJ beating Kendrick was what we expected to happen. There might have been the result that we expected, but the way that they got there was different from what we were really hoping for and what should have been used to continue or end said storylines.
So after that, we're just going to move on to Raw, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about Raw. This was the Raw after the special event, after Clash of Champions. So we're going to get some fallout here. And we actually started differently in the fact that we did not have an Authority promo.
No.
And we had, we opened with new champ Roman Reigns, the new U.S. championship holder. I was going to be a little bit sick in my mouth when I saw that because it just doesn't feel right to me. And he's taking on Rusev in a rematch. Rusev invoked his automatic, rematch clause.
And Rusev already in the ring.
Rusev already in the ring. That's a good point. And we get this match, which went on for a long time. I mean, this seemed like it was like a 20-minute match.
From what I am seeing here, 25 minutes and 34 seconds.
Right. I like the fact that they started started Raw out this way because it was a little bit different. I don't like the rematch from the pay-per-view the next night. I'm just not a fan of this.
We've gone over this.
We've actually seen Roman and Rusev now fight a bunch of times. It was just too much too soon. We got more cheers and boos from Roman.
I would agree.
I believe that would be fair to say.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, fuck you, Cincinnati. You're a terrible crowd because there was many other reasons why I felt this way later on.
Yeah, later on, I would agree with you with that. Listen, we had that situation. We started out with a kind of a mat-based wrestling match, which we have not seen from these two, much different than the night before. But it was kind of a back-and-forth affair in general. At the end of the match, we get a double countout. We get a double countout for Rusev's rematch for the U.S. title. How do you feel about that?
It's a cop-out. We hate the rematch right after a pay-per-view. We're going to get another one later on. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways that you can continue a feud without having the automatic rematch done right afterwards.
But
because now they're going to have a rematch then at some other point because this was a no finish.
But this is my question. Do you really think that we should really have these guys fight again? Because at this point, I think Roman beat Rusev before the pay-per-view, beat him at the pay-per-view. We had a no finish the pay-per-view before that with them. Don't we just need to get Rusev away from Roman at this point? Do we really need to have Rusev lose to Roman again?
It really would be best.
It's time. We need to get him away. Don't let him lose several pay-per-views in a row. That's
unless they are going to put the belt back on Rusev and they just wanted to use this for something.
I do not think it's a possibility. Do not think it's a possibility. To me, this speaks of their desire to keep Rusev, quote-unquote, strong by having him not lose the rematch, which I'm a fan of. I'm perfectly okay with it as long as they move him away from Roman because it's time. If he's going to lose that belt and not be a threat to him, they need to move him away. We ended up with a chair spot where Rusev was going to hit Roman with a chair when they got back in the ring. Roman hits him with a spear, sits down in a chair for some reason because he's a smarmy dick and just kind of taunts him and then hits him with a chair anyway because that's what a babyface does.
Absolutely.
That's what a babyface does. I still think that Rusev is the babyface in all of this, in my opinion, and Roman's a heel. But that's me. That's just me. The next segment we got was Mick out to talk about the best of seven series between Sheamus and Cesaro and calling both the guys out and talking about their championship opportunity. I love the fact that Sheamus and Cesaro were so fixated on their championship opportunity, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what they should,
that's what it was built
all
around.
They should yeah. care about, right? And that's an important part, and it shows passion and desire to move up in the company, which I really, really enjoyed. You know, there was good passion between from both of those guys, and Mick decides to give them a tag team championship opportunity and say that they're going to challenge whoever wins the match later on between the New Day and Anderson and Gallows, another rematch, for the tag team titles. This does not seem like it was the plan from the beginning. Do you agree with that?
Cop out. 100% cop out, in my opinion. I was furious at this because you took a – this. I would have felt this way if they would have done this with Slater and Rhino. If they would have taken them, built them up to that certain point, and then pulled the wool over their eyes or pulled the rug out from underneath them. Something's being pulled. And these two put on a fantastic story for six matches building up to this, and then to run a no finish and be like, well, guess what? Now you're going to get a tag team. We already have one makeshift tag team that's running as the champions on the other show. We don't need to have a makeshift tag team running as the champions on this show.
Is it possible that this could be a really good thing? Is it possible that Cesaro and Sheamus could be great?
I absolutely do think that it is possible, but I'm very mad at how this story was portrayed.
If this was the plan all along, they would have booked the series differently, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If this was the plan all along, it should have gone one, two, three, four. You know,
Cesaro would have had more wins before that.
3-3. That's the way you book this. Mm-hmm. If you're going to book Cesaro going over strong and coming back, you book him 3-0 and come back. If you're going to book them to tie and become tag team champions down the road, you book it as a back and forth affair.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
No, that makes perfect sense.
So I feel like this was a last minute cop out because they didn't know where they were going with the story. That being said, it's not the worst thing in the world. Neither one of these guys were going to walk in and win the title, whether Universal or US, especially given who's holding those titles now. So I'm not devastated by it. And I kind of like what happened later on in the story between these two. So I'm not a fan of the way that it was booked, but I still think it was interesting.
Okay.
We get Anderson and Gallows right afterwards versus the New Day in a rematch from the night before.
It's like, okay, we've seen this happen before, where right after a pay-per-view, the person gets a rematch and they win the title on Raw. Why didn't you just do it on the pay-per-view? We didn't get that.
We didn't get that. What we ended up having was at least a commentary team did talk about the trombone from the night before. Bless you, Corey Graves, for being the only voice of reason and talking about the fact that the babyfaces cheated to win. Kofi takes a hard headfirst bump into the steps and wore a crimson mask. That
he was
brutal.
A fountain.
And they showed the entire thing
on
live TV, which is very, very interesting. And Kofi ends up going over. And getting the pinfall, and Anderson Gallows just continue to be underused and misused.
Why are they here at this point?
They should have come in and dominant.
Like they were a WCW team, and they're like, "We're going to show you that WWE's better by putting our people over you."
The best moment for those guys was their debut, and that has been it.
The first and what should have been the only doctor segment was fun.
That was okay. But their debut in street clothes, taking out, I think, what was it, the Usos?
Yes.
That was the best thing they ever did.
Yeah.
But because they haven't been booked properly. So now they're an afterthought. The New Day still has the titles. And listen, the New Day are still entertaining. I'm a little bit over their shtick. But we didn't need this match here. Anderson and Gallows didn't deserve a rematch.
No.
They didn't lose their titles the night before. They lost the match for the titles the night before. They didn't deserve a rematch. This is, to me, just lazy booking. This reeks of the writers having nothing else to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
They end up telling us that Seth has hurt his ribs from the night before with a gut buster that Kevin Owens performed from the top rope. And they show a little bit of a video with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H embracing after Clash of Champions pay-per-view, trying to set up a little bit of an angle later on with Mick and Steph, essentially, saying that maybe Steph and Triple H have been colluding all along. Mick ends up giving a very passionate promo about Sheamus and Cesaro, which is probably more passionate than 99.9% of all promos given by all wrestlers about themselves. Didn't you agree? I mean, he sold this thing like
he was on the verge of tears.
The second coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I wasn't really sure at first watching of how to take this because part of me wanted, call me a dick. Part of me wanted to laugh that he was on the verge of tears. But then I was like, you know what? Like, fuck that. Like, he's passionate about these two.
He's trying to get these guys over. He's doing everything in his power. And I give him props for it. I
absolutely do. And I felt bad that I was making fun of it at first, but like, God damn it. If Mick Foley doesn't appreciate the young, talented people that are in this company and that he's feeling for it. And I appreciated that.
I did too, and I was happy to see it. And he obviously cares, and this is a storyline that's important, and it's going to, and it should continue. We got Bayley versus Anna Fields in kind of a main roster versus jobber kind of squash match. It was an extended, I wouldn't even call it a squash. It was an extended match where Bayley ends up going over. The crowd just was not into this one. And it was a shame, and I was just thinking they have the same thing about Sami Zayn. They have not introduced Bayley well. They have not introduced her character well. They have not given her the journey to follow. Then we got an interview in the ring Tom Phillips?
Yes.
Where Tom Phillips came into the ring and interviewed Bayley, where she put over Charlotte and Sasha Banks and said that they're great. And that she's great too, and she'll be there soon, and that they haven't seen anything yet from her in the women's division, and she's going to win that title. Everything that I was saying kind of negatively about the way they built her just gets negated, because now it seems like they're starting her journey.
Yes.
They're starting her journey by beating an enhancement talent, showing that she wasn't dominant over the enhancement talent. Corey Graves, during the match, was selling the fact that she just was not up to snuff. And maybe she just couldn't hang with the best of the women's division. This is now, I hope, the journey for Bayley that I think should be a year long before she really gets back up there in that world title picture, the women's title picture.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on this. I don't know what else I can say. You summed that up properly.
I just thought it was very well done. Mick ends up calling out Stephanie in the backstage about the whole Triple H connection and the fact that she brought the ref out later during the championship match the night before. And Stephanie does what Stephanie does, which is be the best heel in the company, honestly, on the mic on a regular basis. She really is. Listen, we get so tired of the authority.
And my issues might be just because she is that good, because I fucking hate Stephanie.
She chewed Mick out and gave him every single reason in the book why there was no problem with that. And where were you? You should have been the one controlling the main event. You should have been the one looking out for it. I had to go out and bring a ref out to get that match done because you were checking on Cesaro and Sheamus. We have doctors to do that. Quite honestly, it was really good.
Yeah.
It was really well done. And while I don't want to see as much authority figure stuff, it was one of the better segments of the night. And it cast out on the whole Stephanie Triple H thing and put Mick in his place, which I thought was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I did. We get a tag team match from the cruiserweight division afterwards. And it was Rich Swann and what's
Cedric Alexander.
Cedric Alexander versus
Drew Gulak and Lindsay Dorado.
Dorado. Thank you for all that, because I wrote all it down and it didn't make any sense to me in the way I wrote it. It's a tag team match in the cruiserweight division. We get purple ropes. It's a big deal. It's a different thing. One thing I have to mention, they gave Gulak and Dorado.
El Dorado, but Lindsay Dorado.
That's what I thought too.
Golden Links.
They gave them
talking
packages
heads.
beforehand, talking about their cruiserweight stuff. I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough just to every week introduce a couple of new guys and just give them those little things and hope the crowd cares about it. This was a fine match.
Mm-hmm.
These guys did a great job. They worked hard. There were fun, exciting moves. But if they're going to continue to do this, they're going to struggle with this cruiserweight division.
With this crowd, yes, they are. This was pretty much the promos that they used to introduce Gulak and Lindsay on the Cruiserweight Classic. I think almost cut for cut. Cedric and Rich Swann have now been on television a couple times now. I think Rich Swann is getting a little bit of a connection with the crowd, and I think that's an awesome thing to see. We both have seen him perform live, and we think that he has an extreme talent. I'm a huge fan of Drew Gulak, not just because he's from Philadelphia, but he performs a really tough, hard-nosed style mat wrestling base that I really love. He's like a Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan type of character, in my opinion, from his indie days. They are a weird tag team in that instance. Gulak's more of a heel. Dorado's straight up babyface because he's that lucha libre style.
But the whole thing is eventually they're going to have to tell a story with these
yes.
guys.
And there wasn't a whole lot of story there.
And not just have them go out and put on good matches.
Unless the story is that they want to build up Cedric and Rich Swann as a tag team, which I'm for that.
But they
don't have a tag team title right. for the cruiserweights.
I just think at some point it's not just impressive matches. It's not just a great moveset. Yeah. It's a story.
You're being WCW at this point. Yes. You're just throwing them out there to put on impressive matches. And you're going to need an Eddie Guerrero who is going to go out there and take things into their own hands to get themselves over.
I completely agree with that. We have Cesaro and Sheamus in their first tag team match against two guys. I don't have their names, and I'm not really in.
One of the guys' names, I'm looking through it now. Nick Cutler and Willis Williams are their names. I loved that Cole said, and here's Nick Cutler, who's better than Jay Cutler.
Yeah, that was
I was like, oh, kind of funny. God, they cut down Jay Cutler.
we got some let's go jobber chance. These guys actually got some offense in on Cesaro, which I thought was kind of
lame.
Strange.
Yeah.
But we end up with Sheamus brogue kicking both of them, both of the jobbers, both of the tag teams, and basically having Cesaro pin the wrong one, which I don't know if you noticed that, but
he
pinned the wrong guy. He pinned the guy that was not tagged into the match. but the whole idea was we had some hard tags between the two, and those two guys were not really getting along, but they won the match. And it's this odd couple tag team, which we've seen many, many times, and it's worked many times. I'm okay with it. I'm not thrilled, but I'm excited and cautiously optimistic that it will be good.
I'm not for it. I'm 100% against this. I'm very mad that this story wasn't just finished up the way that it should have been done. We have tag teams. We have Enzo and Cass. We have the Shining Stars. We have the club, along there, all of whom are, in my opinion, more deserving of a tag team title shot than Sheamus and Cesaro. Like, this should have been for a singles title contest, and I'm mad. Like, they might make things turn out right, but we'll see.
So, the next segment proved that the crowd is nothing but assholes.
Yes.
Right? TJ Perkins, we end up with a match versus... Who is his opponent? No, this is a backstage segment.
Oh, yes.
This is him backstage giving an interview, and Brian Kendrick interrupting, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
And Kendrick did a great job. He really is the best person on the microphone there. But the crowd was chanting boring, I believe, or what? They were giving him what chance?
Yeah, they were doing what chance, yeah.
Fuck you. We have to care about these guys.
And it was from the first thing that TJ said.
He said, yes.
It was like, you're not even going to give the dude a chance.
No, it was, that was very embarrassing, and I kind of ashamed of the crowd giving that kind of a reaction to a
I champion. Never liked Cincinnati anyway.
Yeah. But I will say that Brian Kendrick did a great job.
Yes,
he did a great job in that
he
promo.
He absolutely did.
We get Charlotte and Dana out next. Charlotte cuts a great promo. Just great. I was so impressed the way Sasha controlled the crowd and owned the ring and owned the crowd through this whole promo. Several times doing what Miz does often. Excuse me, I'm talking, right?
Yeah.
Which immediately gets boos to rain down. Don't get flustered by them. Let them feed into you and what you're trying to do, which was wonderful. Sasha came out to interrupt, demanding a one-on-one match, a rematch for the title. Charlotte ends up conceding a title shot for next week on Raw. And I thought this was a really, really good segment. I thought that Charlotte, she continues to impress me. And I feel every single week I seem like I'm saying it.
This was so old school heel that it was beautiful.
She owned
it. I'm going to give you your title shot next week. I was like, oh, you had me eating out of the palm of your hand. You were so amazing.
Everything about her is just every week it seems like she's gaining momentum and getting better and better. And once again, for those of you who think that she's not the best performer in the women's division, you need to look again. I'm sorry, but you're wrong. She's the best on the microphone. She owns it the best. And quite honestly, in the ring, she's doing kind of the best work out there right now. Sasha is more dynamic performer, but Charlotte's doing the best work, and she deserves to hold that championship.
Yeah.
We end up having, Sasha take out Charlotte and, Dana and leave them scurrying and kind of standing tall in the ring, waiting for that match next week. Seth and Mick are backstage, and Seth is unhappy. That's all I have for that. We get TJ Perkins versus Tony Nese.
Yes.
In a cruiserweight title match. Once again, we get our purple ropes back. You think they might have just done those back to back, but apparently they changed those ropes really, really fastly. Both guys showed some great athleticism and skill. The crowd started chanting for Randy Savage.
CM Punk at one point, Randy Savage at another. TJ was much more calm and collected during this match than he was the night before.
I agree with that.
Tony Nese, I think, is a fantastic talent as well. He, I think it was Graves who made the comparison between him and Neville, that they both have these power-based moves as well as high-flying moves. Of course, Graves is the best. And so props to him for putting Nese over. And this was a fun little match that the fans like just shit on, and I don't know why.
Why are they shitting on it? And this is one reason they might be.
Okay.
There's no heels and baby faces here. We haven't pushed any kind of animosity back and forth. I don't know if these guys met in the Cruiserweight Championship, the Cruiserweight Classic, but what if they did? What if a guy from the Cruiserweight Classic met with another guy from the Cruiserweight Classic who he lost to and was pissed off that he lost or felt that he was cheated? And there was a holdover feud from the Cruiserweight Classic that established one guy as a face and one guy as a heel. Would that have made the crowd care a little more about it if we talked about it a little bit more beforehand?
They could have even done a TJ versus Grand Metalik match, which is the rematch of the Cruiserweight Classic, and played off of that. I don't know if that would have gotten the crowd into it. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, the more hardcore fans, the indie fans, they tend to be okay with matches that don't really have a reason, as long as it's a good competitive match. They like matches for the sake of matches. The casual fans, maybe not so much, but I just felt like this crowd just wanted to hate on something, and this was their opportunity to hate on something.
You might be right on that, but I'm a pretty intense fan, and I wanted a story here. I would have rather seen TJ Perkins fight someone from the Cruiserweight Classic that he had beat and that was pissed off that he lost. I would have rather seen a heel versus a babyface. And I realize that they're doing something different here. They're presenting the matches in a different way. They're holding the hands up afterwards. We talked about checking the boots and the tight for foreign objects earlier on. I respect what they're doing, and maybe down the road it's going to work out. But for right now, I like good old classic booking. I want to see a heel and a babyface. I want to know who to root for and who not to. And then decide I disagree and root for the other guy. Right now, we're just getting matches for the sake of matches. And because we're getting that, I feel like no matter what, we're going to get some of these kind of crowds that just kind of don't care. Whether they're that kind of crowd that are complete assholes or just ones that sit on their hands.
Yeah.
The only heel in the cruiserweight division is Brian Kendrick. And he's the most,
he is
the most interesting person in the entire division right now.
Yeah. From a fully character standpoint. Yeah. Yes, he is.
So we need to introduce more people in that division that have fully formed characters.
And what might be sad to a certain extent is that one person who I know is signed to a contract who will most likely end up as a heel is Akira Tozawa, and he's Japanese, and they will just make him be a evil foreigner.
Well, we know how well those worked over the years. After this match, which was a great match.
I want to say one thing real quick. They've been doing Hispanic Heritage Month packages all half a month. They weren't doing it at the beginning of the month, FYI. I am very disappointed that they haven't had one for Brian Alvarez.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about. Okay.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
No, it was on Reddit first.
The main event of Raw, apparently as booked, was the highlight reel. I'm going to mention that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Y2J comes out and puts an unnamed cameraman on the list, which was hilarious. Apparently he still has his list. He's putting people's names on the list. I don't know. It's like the clock has turned back, and
the clipboard says List of Jericho on the back of
and
it now.
I love every second of it. I think Jericho's doing an amazing job. Unnamed cameraman, you're on the list. KO comes out, cuts down Dean Ambrose in Cincinnati for some reason, just for fun. I love the fact that he cut down Dean Ambrose.
You forgot about how Jericho cut down Ashton Kutcher, as he said, and Danny Masterson, because they're going to be on the show next week.
You
can't just avoid that.
No, I didn't. I didn't forget that at all. that's just something I don't care about. KO comes out and cuts down Dean Ambrose, who's on a different show than him, which was hilarious.
I love that, yeah.
Cuts down Cincinnati. Seth comes out to try to stop the whole thing, but security holds him back. And who comes out to defend Seth's honor? Enzo and Big Cass. And good for Enzo and Big Cass for coming out, because without them, there wouldn't have been a main event. So thank you, Enzo and Big Cass, and Mick Foley thanks you, because if Stephanie was pissed off at Mick for not being a part of the main event at the pay-per-view and not being there to bring a referee down, she certainly would have been pissed at him for not booking a main event for Raw. So Enzo and Big Cass, thank you very much.
I liked how they're like, you don't even have a match here. And Big Cass is, well, you know, as we were walking past each other backstage, you guys walked past each other right at the entrance. Like, Mick was walking back and you guys walked back. In that split second, Mick goes, you guys are in the main event. You're fighting those two in the ring right now. I got to go take care of Seth.
Mick talks very fast. Did you notice that Enzo and Big Cass have now Mr. Kennedy microphones?
Yes.
But they're on the normal WWE
wireless mics. Yeah.
It looked a little weird.
They looked very weird.
Yeah. I love Chris Jericho playing this like delusional, clueless heel where he says something stupid like,
I'm gonna sit on your lap.
And then says, no, I didn't. I didn't say that.
I said I'm gonna punch you in the mouth.
Yeah. I Chris Jericho.
And KO just going, he said he was going.
Chris Jericho, most entertaining person in the roster right now. I mean, just doing an amazing job. 6 months ago, we were so fed up, we wanted him to go away. This just shows
Stay
that
forever.
You and I can change our minds.
Yes.
Did a wonderful job. We end up with a match, like we talked about, where Owens pins Enzo with a traditional powerbomb, not the pop-up powerbomb that he usually uses. And that was the end of Raw.
I was disappointed that Sammy wasn't involved in any way, but I did enjoy that Kevin won clean with a big power move, making himself look strong over very big over baby faces. I'm for that.
That was fine.
Make your champion look good, even as the heel. Sometimes
you have to do that for Kevin Owens,
because you know what? Enzo and Cass aren't losing anything off of that.
No, absolutely not. And Kevin Owens, he won the title because of Triple H. He retained his title because of ref bump and interference. So yeah, he needs to go over. He needs to win.
Yeah. So that was Raw. We move on to SmackDown. SmackDown, it's kind of weird to me right now having to deal with two shows that are dealing with different storylines on different schedules as far as their pay-per-views are concerned, but whatever. And we start things off with Randy Orton. Cool. We get two network television shows in a row without a authority promo to start things off. I'm more than okay with this. Randy comes out wearing a sleeveless hoodie because that makes a lot of sense. But I digress. And of course, he is talking up his feud with Bray. And Bray comes on to the screen and says things and kind of daring Randy to come find him backstage. And this leads to a whole Hansel and Gretel hide and go seek type of thing throughout the rest of the night. Randy as a face has always bothered me because he doesn't seem that into it most of the time. Randy is probably the least scared person of Bray Wyatt that I've ever seen.
Well, that's bad production. They have to make him actually care about this or else he doesn't, because naturally Randy Orton doesn't seem affected by anything. Mm-hmm. I thought when Randy came back, not this time, but the time before he got injured again, I thought was one of the best Randy Orton, because he seemed like he cared. He seemed like he was into it, and he could be a really dynamic face. If Randy's going to be a dynamic face, he can work. If he's just kind of like a bored, not an interested face, no, he doesn't work at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Randy's a human being. If he's not into what's being told to him, he's not going to put forth his best effort. And I believe that's understandable.
And probably what's happening right now.
Yeah. We get Dean Ambrose backstage cutting I like this Dean. I want to see more of this Dean. The sharp tongued, very anti-hero Dean that many of us have grown to love, not the zany wacky Dean, talking up his match with AJ later on for the world title, the WWE title at this point in time. Then we get an 8-man tag match with American Alpha teaming with Rhino and Heath Slater taking on Ascension and the Usos. Usos with new music and yet another new look. Fits them pretty well.
Good.
And I am normally very much against the 8-man tag for the sake of the 8-man tag. I really thought that this one worked well in the favor of both of these, stories.
I'm
going
glad they actually featured the Ascension.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a good thing.
And holy shit, Slater's over. Slater got the hot tag at one point. I can't remember. What?
From?
I want to say it was Gable.
Okay.
Because Gable was kind of the face in peril during a lot of this because of his knee. Slater got the hot tag big pop from the crowd. He got offense in. It didn't just turn into, oh, he's a dope, but he got offense in. It eventually did turn into a heel win for the tag team, but it was a lot of it was based around Gable's bum knee. And I like that they're keeping that storyline going. I thought that this was well done. It built the, Slater took the pin. It wasn't a pin. It was the Tequila Sunrise.
Yeah. Tap out. Yeah.
Yes. So they built up the Usos and Slater and Rhino for, No Mercy. So that's good. They kept some tension going between American Alpha and the Usos. That's fine and dandy. And you're getting the Ascension involved, not by just taking a pin.
Finally.
Yeah.
Get your other teams involved or else why are they out there?
It might not have been the best thing they could have done for them, but they didn't eat a pin or a submission in the whole thing. So I thought that this was a great job, on their parts for a 10-minute match too. So they gave them some time. Backstage, we get Randy Orton walking around the locker room looking for Bray Wyatt, and he comes across some sticks that are pointing in an arrow direction on what looks like a box.
Is Bray Wyatt the Blair Witch?
That's what it kind of seemed like. And Randy turned it to a different direction. They pan over to Randy looking around. Then they pan back, and oh, they're back to the original direction. And then Eric Rowan was standing there with a new sheep mask because that sheep mask has horns on it.
Oh, horny sheep.
Horny sheep.
No hair on it or a weird Joker?
Just his beard. Then we get a women's tag match.
By the way, that's dumb.
Yes.
That's really dumb.
We get women's tag match with Natalya and Carmella taking on Naomi and Nikki Bella.
Isn't this a rematch from the week before?
Yes.
The match that ended after 30 seconds?
Yes.
Okay.
This went a little longer. This went about 10 minutes. I actually thought this was a fine little match here. And we got the heels going over. Carmella pinned Nikki clean. It was a roll up, but she didn't grab any of the tights and she beats Nikki. So once again, Carmella got the upper hand on Nikki and their feud going on. I feel like Natty and Naomi are also Rans in this whole thing, but I felt like this got the story across pretty well. It wasn't as bad as it could have been. So I was okay with it.
I just like the fact that they're putting Carmella over. They're trying to make her a important part of the women's division by putting her with Nikki, who is not part of the championship picture. This is the right way to use Nikki Bella at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is the right way to get multiple women's feuds going on at the same time. I'm a fan of this.
After this, we had Randy Orton backstage again, looking around for Bray. Oh, and there's doors with words written on them. One that says, "I am a god." And I was like, oh, Bray's doing a, AMA on Reddit. And then there's one that says predator or prey. And Randy Orton opens one of the doors and there's cardboard cutouts of Randy Orton when he was younger behind the door. Very scary, of course, to Randy.
Terrifying.
And then he slowly opens another door, doesn't look in completely. And Eric Rowan is right there on the other side of the door because there's a cameraman on the other side of the door.
Okay, sure.
He
hangs out.
Just waiting for Randy to fully open the door so that he can attack. But Randy doesn't fully open the door. And he closes it and he walks away. And then because the door's locked on the other side, Rowan's like, shit, I gotta attack him.
I had one chance. I didn't take it.
So that goes on. Then we get Miz and Maryse out, Miz's homecoming here in front of his home crowd of Cleveland to celebrate how wonderful he is. And he does some babyface stuff at first by saying, I'm in my home crowd. He gets some fireworks. He talks up the Cleveland Cavaliers finally winning a title, and then proceeds to cut everyone down, as he should, saying that, like, that they gave a parade to the Cavs, but he wins the Intercontinental title and this is all that he gets. He introduces his parents, which, if you've never seen Miz's dad, he's a glorious human being. Then he introduces Dolph Ziggler's parents, who are ringside. And I honestly do believe that they are Dolph's parents because his dad looks exactly like him. And talks about how wonderful it is that they're there to see their loser son. And this, of course, brings out Dolph Ziggler. Dolph cuts a very passionate promo about how sometimes there are things that you love so much, but they don't love you back. But you keep on fighting, you keep on trying, no matter what that thing gives towards you. And this leads into what I feel should have been this would have been a wonderful heel turn for Dolph, just how passionate he got and was speaking like this. Maybe not right then and there, but to lead to one. But what we get pretty much is Dolph wanting one more shot at Miz, and Miz at telling Dolph that he needs to put his career on the line. Or actually, it was Dolph who said, I'll put my career on the line against you.
Yeah.
This, while I think it makes sense in that story of what they're telling, I'm disappointed by this because it pretty much tells us that Dolph is going to win the title.
But it does, but it really doesn't, because Dolph could lose and go to Raw.
You know, that is true. That is
Dolph
true.
Dolph could lose and...
This could be a heel turn for him to go to Raw.
And Dolph could lose and be off TV for 3 months before they bring him back for some reason.
I really hope that something plays out like this. And, like, we're both huge fans of Dolph Ziggler. No, nothing against him. But Miz is in the best position of his career, and this includes when he had the world strap around his waist.
Miz, the person that beats Miz for the IC title should not be Dolph Ziggler.
No.
In my opinion, and I've told you this before, it should be Nakamura.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy who should take the title off of the Miz.
It should be a big deal.
Someone like that. It should be a big deal, someone we haven't seen over and over again. It should be a career-making moment.
Joe. Like, yeah. If they want to turn Joe face again.
Can you imagine Nakamura versus Miz WrestleMania next year? Can you imagine that kind of match where Nakamura says, oh, I've held the IWGP, I'm sorry. I've been drinking way too much tonight. Intercontinental Championship. I'm going to have the WWE Intercontinental Championship. And taking him on and beating him in 5 minutes, even at WrestleMania, that coronation would be everything. Dolph winning this, if he does, would be a big moment. It would be great for him. But it will not change the shape of the Federation. We could have that with the way Miz is, his Intercontinental Championship reign has been so far.
Absolutely. You would be cutting short a story in and of itself. Like, Miz, his progression to this point has been a beautiful story, in my opinion.
Yep.
This is a guy who everyone and their mom hated. And, like, you still might hate him, but you're hating him for the right reasons because he's playing his character wonderfully. Like, I had X-Pac heat on Miz for the longest period of time. I am a complete convert to him. He's wonderful. I give him so much props for what he has done in his career. And I want to see him break Honky Tonk Man's record.
Me too.
For this title. It would be wonderful to have another heel. Hold on to have a title reign like that, because it's so rare nowadays because everyone wants to see the heel lose. And especially if he can keep on doing it with hook or by crook, which is what Honky Tonk Man's title reign was built on. would be fantastic. And yes, the person who ultimately ends that should be a big deal. And I hate to say it for Dolph because we do love him. He's a fantastic worker.
But he's not the right guy.
No. So we'll see where this goes. I really hope that they're not just playing off the obvious here that Dolph is going to have to be the one to beat him. Like maybe they can even do like Dolph loses. He gets frustrated. He turns heel on the whole thing. And then he ends up signing with Raw because of it. Like,
sure.
Like I'm fucking pissed off. And then Mick goes, we need him and brings him in.
That could work.
Yeah, it absolutely could. After this, we get
More Bray Wyatt
addressing the camera backstage. And he says, oh, yeah, Randy, you are acting like a mouse in a maze. Be careful. Becky Lynch comes out for a match, but she is attacked by Alexa Bliss on the entrance ramp, and she slams Becky's face into the ramp and holds the title in her face. I'm absolutely fine with this.
We don't have to see either one of them wrestle on the show. It extends the storyline. Perfectly well done.
Yeah. Kurt Hawkins, don't fucking care.
Never.
And then the announcers talked about the No Mercy Triple Threat WWE title match, and Wyatt interrupts with his latest message, and there's a character behind Bray who pops up wearing a sheep mask. Like, oh, who is this? This guy with the sheep mask on that's wearing a sleeveless hoodie. Oh, it's Randy Orton. And Randy Orton beats up Bray Wyatt. But then things get a little weird because we get a cut. We get the Bray Wyatt like cut. Back to Bray Wyatt, unharmed, nothing going on, and he's looking fine, talking down Randy Orton. This was interesting to me. Yeah, it's a little paranormal, like, which, you know, like, well, you don't, but I'm talking to Kevin here. Like, we're not into that type of stuff. We don't believe in that type of shtick, but for WWE, this is something different, and I'll follow along for a little bit and see where they want to go with it. But it's a bit far fetched, but you know what? You did something different. I'm hooked for at least now.
Sure.
Nothing else you want to say about it?
I this does not excite me. From the very beginning, Orton and Bray, I thought could be a really, really good feud. I don't think they've done this very well at all. Orton looks like he's phoning it in, and it just seems like the same old crap from Bray.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
AJ Styles promo, Richie Valens, La Bamba, and John Cena is on commentary for the main event. Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles World Championship match. Bell rings with probably about 23 minutes left in the show. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be fine bit of stuff. And we do get a nice little match between, I shouldn't say little. I hate when I say that.
Yeah,
but,
you say little a lot. Yeah.
This is a nice match between these guys. Two fantastic workers who we know can put on a great match. Some good near falls there. AJ ate the mat on the springboard 450, which always looks like I don't know how anyone could ever get up from doing that to themselves. But then we get AJ smacking John Cena on the outside. Dean Ambrose going to the outside, taking his pot shot at Cena. And, ultimately, this leads to Cena distraction and AJ picking up the win, off of a leverage pin on Dean because of it. And then Cena stands tall. He beats up both guys and he holds up the title because he wants to be 16-time world champion. it might seem overplayed by having seen a stand tall for something like that, but there was a number of points throughout this show where I think that they did things that were kind of by the book, but I feel like that they worked. The 8-man tag, I felt like that worked out just fine for the tag teams. I felt like that the tag team match between the women worked out fine, even though it was by the book. I felt like this. We knew that AJ was going to retain this title, retain his title in this match. But I felt like this did advance their story a little bit and show and really develop, as much as it wasn't meant to be, this developed John Cena as a threat to them, because John Cena really hasn't been a threat to that title in a long time.
I'm one of those people who has consistently been annoyed with John Cena near the top of the card, or at the top of the card, who enjoyed his U.S. title run and did not want to see him competing for a world title again. But I like the fact that he's competing for this world title again. John Cena's a big deal. John Cena's a good worker. John Cena has all the things necessary, and he has been the face that runs the place for a long time. And having Cena around the top title makes it a bigger deal. And if AJ can retain...
Oh, even bigger deal.
Even bigger deal. We don't know where they're going with this, but it was about time for John Cena, big match John, to get back involved in the world title picture. And they've done it well. It's been tastefully done. I like it.
Yeah.
I do like it. And a lot of people won't, because they just think, oh, it's just John Cena burying more people. That's not the case.
No.
I think this is being relatively well done. Quite honestly, if anyone doesn't belong in this right now, it's Dean to me.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you are right with that perspective. John's been out of the world title picture for well over a year, as far as I can recall, because I think the Seth thing was his last time.
Yeah.
And he lost it. That was at SummerSlam, or was that before SummerSlam? Was SummerSlam Sting?
Night of Champions last year was Sting.
Okay. So it was SummerSlam with Cena, where he put both his titles on the line during that match, or during that card. So that was the last time that John was involved in the world title picture.
Even him just peeking his head back in with the U.S. title.
Yeah.
He was still the U.S. title. He's been really out of the main event world title picture
since he lost to Brock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's 2 years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, like, he is still a huge draw for this company, and he deserves to.
And a hell of a hand.
Yes. Sometimes we give credit where credit is due. What Culture did a wonderful video about some of the most underappreciated wrestlers of all time. And John Cena was on there. And it was like, despite the fact that he's held 15 world titles, like, he's an underappreciated wrestler. He's done a whole lot in his career. And, with the most of the time it being John Cena sucks, or let's go Cena sucks. He's been able to put on fantastic matches with great wrestlers, and, evidence in most recently with AJ Styles. And I think that we're going to get a really fun match between the three of these guys. He doesn't need to win. That's fine. If he eats the pin to AJ, if he eats the pin to either one of these guys, that's a huge fucking deal.
If he gets the title back and then ends up dropping it again, that will be wonderful too.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of this. I'm a fan of the storyline.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have anything else worthwhile for John to be in, putting him in the world title picture to help elevate some younger, well, less experienced maybe to the casual fan, that's not a terrible thing to do, because he can elevate that storyline immediately by his entrance into it. So I'm absolutely for this. I'm intrigued by it. I think that SmackDown is a better show. It had some things going against it, but SmackDown's still the better show, in my opinion, week after week. And I like the fact that it's the one that I have to pay attention to more.
It's also 2 hours, which is a big bonus.
Yeah. My girlfriend, who isn't very much into wrestling, came over and watched last night. And when it was over, she's like, "Wait, why is it over?" I'm like, "SmackDown's only 2 hours." She goes, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "That's nice." I'm like, "Yeah, it is."
Only one.
Like, they get so much more accomplished in those 2 hours than SmackDown or than Raw does in the three. So that does our week. Normally I think we would say that we wouldn't have a show next week because we're off, but now with all these other, I think that it is lead into No Mercy next week.
Is it really?
I think it is go home for. Yeah.
Let's do it.
We're going to pretty much be every week podcast at this point.
Pretty much always we do even when there wasn't a go home show or something, we talk about NXT or we talk about something else going on. Yeah. So it just seems like we're going to be every week anyway.
Yeah. We don't have a top five for you. We have a couple cool ideas in the works for those, but we definitely got our hour and a half worth out of this episode. Anything you want to add before we send things away? Be sure that you follow us on Twitter at MissSpots, where we're live tweeting along to every Monday Night Raw, SmackDown Live, pay-per-view. Try to get in there on some NXTs every now and then. When we're recording on Wednesdays, it's a little difficult, but we try. And you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. But most importantly, you can get this podcast in many different fashions, whichever is convenient for you, whether that be iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music. You can subscribe to us on all of those fashions so that you can get the new episodes each and every week, it seems now, automatically downloaded to the device of your choice. Or you can listen to us every Friday on Geek Life Radio. That's geekliferadio.com at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Since we are finished up for this, for Kevin, my name is Mike, and we'll see you guys next time. Good night and good wrestling.